Topic 28. Decoupling. In his book, My First Summer in the Sierra, John Muir said, "When we try to pick out anything by itself, we find it hitched to everything else in the universe." In Topic 8, The Essence of Good Design, we claim that using good design principles will make the code you write easy to change. Coupling is the enemy of change because it links together things that must change in parallel. This makes change more difficult. Either you spend time tracking down all the parts that need changing, or you spend time wondering why things broke when you changed just one thing and not the other things to which it was coupled. When you are designing something you want to be rigid, a bridge or a tower perhaps, you couple the components together so that they are anchored at each end to two or more other components. Have a look at a box girder bridge or a tall radio mast to see this in practice. The links work together to make the structure rigid. Compare that with something like a simple open chain, where each link is free to move. There's no structural rigidity. Individual links can move and others just accommodate it. When you're designing bridges, you want them to hold their shape. You need them to be rigid. But when you're designing software that you'll want to change, you want exactly the opposite. You want it to be flexible. And to be flexible, individual components should be coupled to as few other components as possible. To make matters worse, coupling is transitive. If A is coupled to B and C, and B is coupled to M and N, then A is actually coupled to B, C, M, and N. This means there's a simple principle you should follow. Tip 44. Decoupled code is easier to change. Given that we don't normally code using steel beams and rivets, just what does it mean to decouple code? In this section, we'll talk about train wrecks, chains of method calls, globalization, the dangers of static things, and inheritance. Why subclassing is dangerous. To some extent, this list is artificial. Coupling can occur just about any time two pieces of code share something. So as you listen to what follows, seek out the underlying patterns so you can apply them to your code. And keep a lookout for some of the symptoms of coupling. Wacky dependencies between unrelated modules or libraries. Simple changes to one module that propagate through unrelated modules in the system or break stuff elsewhere in the system. Developers who are afraid to change code because they aren't sure what might be affected. Meetings where everyone has to attend because no one is sure who will be affected by a change. Train wrecks. We've all seen, and probably written, code like this. Totals equal customer.orders.findorderid.getTotals. Totals.grandTotal equals totals.grandTotal minus discount. Totals.discount equals discount. We're getting a reference to some orders from a customer object, using that to find a particular order, and then getting the set of totals for the order. This chunk of code is traversing five levels of abstraction, from customer to total amounts. Ultimately, our top-level code has to know that a customer object exposes orders, that the orders have a find method that takes an order ID and returns an order, and that the order object has a totals object, which has getters and setters for grand totals and discounts. That's a lot of implicit knowledge. But worse, that's a lot of things that cannot change in the future if this code is to continue to work. All the cars in a train are coupled together, as are all the methods and attributes in a train wreck. Let's imagine that the business decides that no order can have a discount of more than 40%. Where would we put the code that enforces that rule? You might say it belongs in the apply discount function we just wrote. That's certainly part of the answer. But with the code the way it is now, you can't know that this is the whole answer. Any piece of code, anywhere, could set fields in the totals object, and if the maintainer of that code didn't get the memo, it wouldn't be checking against the new policy. One way to look at this is to think about responsibilities. Surely the totals object should be responsible for managing the totals. And yet, it isn't. It's really just a container for a bunch of fields that anyone can query and update. The fix for that is to apply something we call Tip 45. Tell, don't ask. This principle says that you shouldn't make decisions based on the internal state of an object and then update that object. Doing so totally destroys the benefits of encapsulation and, in doing so, spreads the knowledge of the implementation throughout the code. So, the first fix for our train wreck is to delegate the discounting to the total object. Customer.orders.findorderid.getTotals.applyDiscount. We have the same kind of tell-don't-ask, TDA, issue with the customer object and its orders. We shouldn't fetch its list of orders and search them. We should instead get the order we want directly from the customer. Customer.findOrder.orderID.getTotals.applyDiscount.discount. The same thing applies to our order object and its totals. Why should the outside world have to know that the implementation of an order uses a separate object to store its totals? Customer.findOrderOrderID.applyDiscount.discount. And this is where we'd probably stop. At this point, you might be thinking that TDA would make us add an apply discount to order method to customers. And, if followed slavishly, it would. But TDA is not a law of nature. It's just a pattern to help us recognize problems. In this case, we're comfortable exposing the fact that a customer has orders and that we can find one of those orders by asking the customer object for it. This is a pragmatic decision. In every application, there are certain top-level concepts that are universal. In this application, those concepts include customers and orders. It makes no sense to hide orders totally inside customer objects. They have an existence of their own. So we have no problem creating APIs that expose order objects. The Law of Demeter. People often talk about something called the Law of Demeter, or LOD, in relation to coupling. The LOD is a set of guidelines written in the late 80s by Ian Holland. He created them to help developers on the Demeter project keep their functions cleaner and decoupled. The LOD says that a method defined in a class C should only call other instance methods in C, its parameters, methods in objects that it creates, both on the stack and in the heap, global variables. In the first edition of this book, we spent some time describing the LOD. In the intervening 20 years, the bloom has faded on that particular rose. We now don't like the global variable clause, for reasons we'll go into in the next section. We also discovered that it's difficult to use this in practice. It's a little like having to parse a legal document whenever you call a method. However, the principle is still sound. We just recommend a somewhat simpler way of expressing almost the same thing. Tip 46. Don't chain method calls. Try not to have more than one dot when you access something. And access something also covers cases where you use intermediate variables, as in the following code. This is poor style. Amount equals customer.orders.last.totals.amount. This is also poor style. Orders equals customer.orders. Last equals orders.last. Totals equals last.totals. Amount equals totals.amount. There's a big exception to the one-dot rule. The rule doesn't apply if the things you're chaining are really, really unlikely to change. In practice, anything in your application should be considered likely to change. Anything in a third-party library should be considered volatile, particularly if the maintainers of that library are known to change APIs between releases. Libraries that come with the language, however, are probably pretty stable, and so we'd be happy with code such as people.sortby, person.age, .first10.map person.name. I skipped some housekeeping when I read that code. I'm a book, not a programmer. That Ruby code worked when we wrote the first edition 20 years ago, and will likely still work when we enter the home for old programmers any day now. Chains and pipelines. In Topic 30, Transforming Programming, we talk about composing functions into pipelines. These pipelines transform data, passing it from one function to the next. This is not the same as a train wreck of method calls, as we are not relying on hidden implementation details. That's not to say that pipelines don't introduce some coupling. They do. The format of the data returned by one function in a pipeline must be compatible with the format accepted by the next. Our experience is that this form of coupling is far less a barrier to changing the code than the form introduced by train wrecks. The evils of globalization. Globally accessible data is an insidious source of coupling between application components. Each piece of global data acts as if every method in your application suddenly gained an additional parameter. After all, that global data is available inside every method. Globals couple code for many reasons. The most obvious is that a change to the implementation of the global potentially affects all the code in the system. In practice, of course, the impact is fairly limited. The problem really comes down to knowing that you've found every place you need to change. Global data also creates coupling when it comes to teasing your code apart. Much has been made of the benefits of code reuse. Our experience has been that reuse should probably not be a primary concern when creating code, but the thinking that goes into making code reusable should be part of your coding routine. When you make code reusable, you give it clean interfaces, decoupling it from the rest of your code. This allows you to extract a method or module without dragging everything else along with it. And if your code uses global data, then it becomes difficult to split it out from the rest. You'll see this problem when you're writing unit tests for code that uses global data. You'll find yourself writing a bunch of setup code to create a global environment just to allow your test to run. Tip 47. Avoid global data. Global data includes singletons. In the previous section, we were careful to talk about global data and not global variables. That's because people often tell us, "Look, no global variables. I wrapped it all as instance data in a singleton object or global module." Try again, Skippy. If all you have is a singleton with a bunch of exported instance variables, then it's still just global data. It just has a longer name. So then folks take this singleton and hide all the data behind methods. Instead of accessing the global variable config.loglevel, they now call the function config.getLogLevel open and close paren. This is better because it means that your global data has a bit of intelligence behind it. If you decide to change the representation of log levels, you can maintain compatibility by mapping between the new and old in the config API. But you still have only the one set of configuration data. Global data includes external resources. Any mutable external resource is global data. If your application uses a database, data store, file system, service API, and so on, it risks falling into the globalization trap. Again, the solution is to make sure you always wrap these resources behind code that you control. Tip 48. If it's important enough to be global, wrap it in an API. Inheritance adds coupling. The misuse of subclassing, where a class inherits state and behavior from another class, is so important that we discuss it in its own section. It's all about change. Coupled code is hard to change. Alterations in one place can have secondary effects elsewhere in the code, and often in hard-to-find places that only come to light a month later in production. Keeping your code shy, having it only deal with things it directly knows about, will help keep your applications decoupled, and that will make them more amenable to change.